The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten. And today I'm joined by the most OG of lineups. I've got Joe Tomlinson and Chris Hamill. Hello, guys.
Yes.
Hi, mate.
Good to be here.
Yeah, how are you both doing?
Not well.
What's so wrong, Joe?
What do you mean? I'm not going into it, mate. I refuse to talk about Man United anymore. I refuse.
Oh, yeah. What happened to Man United this weekend?
Yeah, we lost 6-1, mate, to Spurs.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't
good,
was it?
He was so sad shooting winners and losers last night.
Oh, no, that's tragic.
He actually, in between takes, when we had a few technical errors, he actually went, I am done with today, at the top of his voice.
I felt that way about 9:15 this morning when I was trying to sort out the Zoom so that I could do a VO that I didn't know I was doing. While, you know, when you're messaging about three people on WhatsApp at the same time, and after a while you're like, if somebody walked into this room right now, I would shove my phone through their brain in order for all of this to be over.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but I've had the worst start to a day.
Go on. How's your tooth?
Yeah, have you signed Edinson Cavani? Because if not, then it's not been as bad as mine.
No, mate, but
Have you signed nobody? Are you talking yourself into Tamar Lamar?
Yeah, I'm excited about Celtic signing Diego Laxalt, who is like an AC Milan reject from that summer transfer window that we lauded 2 years ago.
Is he the white guy with cornrows?
Yes.
Nice.
That's very Neil Lennon, mate. So my start to the day, woke up, finished off the winners and losers edit from last night because I was up until 1:30 and I thought, if I have to animate another overlay, I'm going to kill myself. I want to go to bed. Had to wait a while for your footage to download, actually, Tomlinson, because my internet is just tragic. And then woke up this morning with the revelation that the guy we've hired to cover someone who's having a baby on Football Daily, don't know if they want people knowing that, so I'm not going to say any names, hasn't been cleared by Sky's HR to work yet. So we had a week's worth of work with no home to go to.
God.
So that was my preparation for this podcast. I'm now writing Euro transfer talk in about 45 minutes straight after this. So yeah, tremendous. Wonderful start.
Yeah, that does sound horrific, to be honest. But, you know, like, it's hard to be the king. That heavy is the head that wears the crown, eh, Chris?
I've got a big old head as well. It's heavy. It's heavy without the crown, mate.
Massive Swede. Okay, so shall we move on to this week's topic? So what we're going to do is kind of bring back the idea of hot takes. Because, obviously, the old show hot takes, some of you may remember, you guys would send in your ridiculous opinions. But actually, in our WhatsApp conversations, you do steadily realise that everyone on our team has at least one genuinely mental opinion about football. And I'd say we three of the most opinionated, probably. So, Chris, I would like to start with you. What is your football hot take? Because you've been throwing round insults in the WhatsApp group, like George Wright.
Yeah, maybe that's just coincided with recent stresses. My favorite like thing in the WhatsApp group, or one of my favorite things, aside from like George and Joe deciding that someone is utterly shit after about 10 minutes of a game, is Patrick Van Straten is typing only for the message never to be revealed, because you've clearly had an internal monologue of yourself where you've gone, I can either spend half an hour going head to head with someone, or I can just sack this off and go do some weights in the garden or something.
Genuinely what it is.
Yeah. So my hot take at the start of this season, and it's actually one that's been bubbling under the surface for quite some time. I think my disdain for Chelsea, at least at the start of last season, was palpable. I made pretty clear on Sunday Vibes last week that I think Manchester United's progress in terms of their playing style in terms of their player improvement has been limited. So my hot take this week is that Graham Potter is in the top 10 managers in the Premier League and Lampard and Ole are not.
Okay. I don't think that's that spicy. I don't think that's that spicy,
I don't think that's hot. I think that you could go harder. I think you could say Graham Potter is in the top third of managers in the Premier League.
So I would push 26. I could push
eight. 6 to 7. I could push eight, but the quality at the top is unbelievable, isn't it? I think we are in the golden era in terms of managerial calibre in the Premier League. I mean, you're looking at like 6th, 7th spot, Nino. Nino,
Nuno
sort of competing with Jose, with Arteta. I mean, Arteta, that's generous. I actually think Arteta...
We're guessing at Arteta, aren't we?
Arteta would do well to creep into the top 10. At this point in his managerial career, in
5 years' time, Arteta might be... We might look back and say Arteta was like the third best manager, but we also might look back and be like, eh, he was pretty middle of the pack.
Yeah, I like that. I like that sort of analogy. So I could push Potter if I'm feeling a little bit giddy about Brighton, which I have felt after watching them for 3 or 4 games. The progress has just been unbelievable under him, as has, you know, the progress of several individuals. He's turning £5-6 million players, although they did pay £20 million for Webster. Now I think about it from the Championship, into you know, players worth 4 or 5 times that, who look like they can compete for a top half finish. And some of the football they're playing is sort of Europa League standard, in my opinion.
I agree with the style of football. I think Potter's gone playing a gorgeous style of football, and I think it is fantastic to watch at times. I do still think they're a little bit naive at times. I was watching the Everton game on the weekend, and I mean, White, Webster and Dunk, horrific. They were absolutely awful at the back.
It was a comprehensive loss, you're right. Like, Everton deserved to win.
They obviously shipped four goals there. Three against United, against Chelsea. So I really agree with you. I think he's gotten playing great football, and it is really a joy to watch at times. But I think a little bit naive at the moment. And as good a football as they've been playing, they've only taken 3 points so far this season. Admittedly, they have played some tough teams. You know, United, Chelsea, and Everton. Not the easiest.
And they were dominant against United and Chelsea. They were the better side against them. Like, I understand what you're saying.
And still shipped 3 goals. Naive.
Let's be honest, though. They were unlucky, too. Like, Reece James bangs an absolutely ridiculous one in. The third one against Chelsea is just a lucky deflection. There's a penalty that shouldn't have been a penalty against United. I mean, like, the United game in particular, like, they were hugely dominant. Yeah. And I know what you're saying. Like, against Everton, yes. At the end, like, they were just passing to Everton in their own half. Like, that was mental. But in the other games, I think they should have taken 6 points.
I like how invested you two are after both agreeing it wasn't the hottest of takes. So I think at least I've started a dialogue here.
So where do you think Brighton finished? Do you actually think Brighton, if you've got Potter as a top 10 manager, you think they can finish top 10?
Listen, it's very hard to say with a club like Brighton with any great confidence, because an injury to a couple of key players could really throw their season, couldn't it? I mean, they've got decent depth now. We saw that when Lallana came in for Bissouma, but Potter's having to convert left wingers like Solly March into left wing backs, although Dan Byrne can now sort of deputise at left back or the left of a centre half pairing as well. They've kind of switched between 3 at the back and 4 at the back. They do that in game really well, don't they? Really bloody judiciously. But just to go back to the results you mentioned, because like you said in Winners and Losers, they should have scored 10 against United. Ecchi had the result in Brighton's favour against Manchester United and Chelsea. So they've just been very unlucky at the start of this campaign. You can't really legislate for Trossard passing straight to, was it James Rodriguez, for Iwobi to kind of set him up on the counter. Although they still dominated for large parts of that Everton game in the second half and still played some really impressive stuff. So maybe lacking a little bit of understanding still in the back. You know, they've got Lamptey, who is just... He's been lightning at the start of this season, hasn't he? And Solly March on either flank. So sometimes the back three don't get massively protected in the wide areas. And James Rodriguez was just able to kind of ghost in a couple times, wasn't he? But I think that's going to improve with time. If you take Adam Lallana out this side, by the way, and put Bissouma in, which was a change that was enforced by the red card. The average age of the squad is around 23.9. The starting 11. That's
impressive.
Insane. It's insane.
It is.
Like Ben White's come in, of course. Like Trossard is now starting to look like a really, really useful number 10. Should we call him a number 10? He loves to roam, doesn't he? Alzati has been converted from a fullback to a really competent central midfielder. I think he's looked great at the start of this season. So you're seeing young players become more tactically astute, going toe-to-toe with Champions League sides. And like it's not, they've not been one-offs, have they? And I'm just kind of besotted by his whole story. I don't know how much time Van Strutt wants to give us anyway, but the Osterson story, obviously incredible. The fact that he retired at 30, fell out of love with the game and then sort of worked his way up from the ninth tier of English football. It is just adds to my love of him, really. And I think the English game needs more people like Graham Potter in it because he's very kind of German in a way, isn't he? Like this, his place in the top flight would be a common story in the Bundesliga. But I think in order to see fresh ideas, in order to nurture English young talent and have them become more tactically versatile, we need more minds like his. And if he can excel at the top level, then maybe club owners will be more receptive to employing people that aren't ex-professionals.
Yes.
High-profile ex-professionals / club legends, because of course he was an ex-professional, but he retired when he was in League Two.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I think actually, like what he's really reminded me of over the last couple of years is Brendan Rodgers at Swansea.
Yeah.
Because the way they defended was like, we're just going to keep the ball. They were much more conservative with their possession actually than Brighton. Like I think people forget that was quite a defensive side, that Swansea team.
And he was.
But they were attractive to watch. They kept the ball and they could compete for possession with the bigger sides. And after a year last year where we were like, this is okay, but like it doesn't look like it's really going anywhere, and in a bad year this team could get relegated, now suddenly they've built all those relationships, they've built all that kind of structure into the side, and they can afford to be a little bit more expansive.
Yeah, like I said, I definitely want to caveat it with injuries to some big players, it could throw them, because I still think they are a quality centre forward away from making sizable progress. Like I like the industry of Morpay and of Connolly, but last season, Opta had them down as the worst side at converting big chances. And there's only so long you can sort of amble around with that ball and chain on your foot, right, before it kind of starts to hamper your progression. They've signed, is it Zakiri? I really don't know. A young star who comes with a decent pedigree, apparently, and he was much sought after. So let's hope that he can sort of help them in forward areas. But just to round off with some numbers for this season, PBS, sixth for shots in the league, conceding the third fewest. And when you consider that they've played the informed side in the league and Chelsea and United, pretty impressive. Still a lot of industry in there, despite, you know, their reputation for playing really nice possession-based football, like their defensive stats, like the tackles and interceptions per 90, very similar to that of Burnley's. So they've got that variety in the game. They can be a little bit nasty as well, can't they? We've got Dunk, Webster. They could be on the front of a Weatherspoons. You wouldn't bat an eyelid. And they're bettered only by Liverpool and Southampton for shots conceded, which is a point I've already touched upon. And expected points thinks they should be sixth. Obviously, very, very early doors. You do expect this to drop off to an extent. That age is probably going to play a part. Thinner squad than some. But I think, based on the brand of football that they're producing at the minute, 10th to 12th isn't unattainable.
Yep,
yeah, I wouldn't be quite as worried about their attack either. I know that you point to whether or not Mopay and Co. can score the goals. I actually am quite confident Mopay will hit sort of 15 this season, around that sort of number.
He got 10, didn't he, last
got 10,
time?
Got 10 last season.
Very young.
Got 10 last season, but I think a year in a
taking
Premier League
penalties.
Of development. He's got 4-4 so far this season, hasn't he? And everywhere he's kind of been throughout his career, first season, maybe a little bit of a bedding in period. I think his first season at Brentford, he got 12. Second season, got 25. So I think I would actually back Mopay to be leading the line and hit sort of around that 15-goal number, which is actually probably the average slash very good return for a team that are finishing anywhere between sort of 13th and 9th. To have a striker to hit 15 goals is probably very good. So I'm not too worried about the Neil Mopay issue. And I think Aaron Connolly can chip in with a few as well.
Mate, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens because he's got past, hasn't he? Like at Swansea, he inherited perilous financial situations and then managed to turn Dan James and Ollie McBurney into £32 million worth of assets. So like I back him to improve Mopay in the next couple years. And if that equates to 15 Premier League goals, then bloody hell.
Just a quick one. That's coming back to your hot take. What 10 managers are you putting above them? Where are you putting them in the top 10? Because you said obviously in your top 10.
I was hoping you'd let me leave that quite generic. I think Klopp first, Pep.
Yeah.
Then probably Ancelotti based on pedigree and recent form. But these are kind of, I'm amenable to these changing. Bielsa, for what he's done in the game, again, that's more of a historical one than what he's doing right now. Although what he's doing right now is very, very good.
Yeah, he's done magic with this lead. So.
I would, Jose Nuno probably competing the level below that. Like,
come on.
I'm probably a little bit more optimistic about Jose than some others at this point in time. I would like to see what he's... I think he can produce much better stuff when all his squad is fit. And that's not something, if we're going to be fair to him, he's had at his disposal until like right now. And then I would go Potter.
So what about like Rodgers? Would you have Rodgers? I think you'd have Rodgers, Evan, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you're right. I would have Rodgers just above him.
And what about Hasenhüttl?
No, I think Hasenhüttl pretty much in the same sort of level at the moment.
Okay. Wow, that's an interesting one. I think I would probably have Hasenhüttl ahead of him. I would have Potter about, I think, more progressive than Sean Dyche, but I think Sean Dyche level.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously this is going to be based on personal preference. Like, yeah. If we're going to go to win percentage in the Premier League or years spent in the Premier League, and I'm judging this as well in terms of the quality of football I enjoy. Like, there's got to be a kind of a philosophy element to this, hasn't there?
You've got to gauge people on their ceiling.
Yeah,
right?
You'd rather watch like, a Potter team than a Dyche team as well.
Well, and also you put Dyche in charge of like Liverpool, and I don't think that they're like an amazing side. Whereas Potter, the way Potter plays, does it like it would be scalable onto a better team.
Yeah, I mean, Pep Guardiola, he cited Pep Guardiola as his main influence. Like, they've got that love of possession, that tactical fluidity in games, like overlapping fullbacks. He always kind of puts together those situations where Brighton players are overloading in key areas. Like, the influence is very clear there. So, yeah, probably more Pep than any other top manager.
Interesting. Well, I think that was I think that you defended it well, even though it wasn't as spicy as I thought. But I agree with you on all counts. So ultimately, your hot take has been deemed lukewarm. Everyone agrees. Before we move on to Joe's, just a quick word from our sponsor, Manscaped. Obviously, we've talked about them before. Their public service announcement, which they insist on calling a pubic service announcement. Ayo. Anyway, their engineering team has confirmed they've successfully created the greatest ball hair trimmer ever, the Lawnmower 3.0, available for purchase right now. It's got a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, which I think we can all agree is a very important factor when we're talking about intimate grooming.
I've been using it, by the way.
Decent.
What, you've both got them?
Yeah.
Okay, give me your thoughts.
Do you know what
very
I
good.
Like?
Very
I
good. Like... The waterproofing, mate, is fantastic.
Yeah, I leave it next to the shower gel now in the shower. And I like that it's got a light on the end.
Yes.
Because obviously I am visually impaired and that really helps.
Oh, yeah. In the shower. Like, is that really a good place for you to be doing this?
Well, with the light, mate. It's a game changer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the LED light works, which illuminates screaming areas.
It works also because you don't have to worry so much about the mess afterwards.
Yeah.
Good point.
Being in
good
a shower. Point,
though you might, you know, like, what's it called? Block up your plug hole. That would not be ideal.
I am quite a cavalier with it, though, while I'm in the shower. So, like, the consistency is not great. Like, I can miss strips. It's come across a little bit mohawky at times.
Oh, yeah, the zebra effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, sure. The good thing about it is it does have a 90-minute battery. So, like, you can afford to take your time if you're not like Chris, where you're just giving yourself a quick buzz cut. It's also got quiet stroke technology. So you can...
That
like,
sounds
go for a,
pervy, doesn't it?
I know. You can go off for a very sneaky trim. It's got a charging stand. So if you want to display it out in public, then obviously you can. It's powered by USB right there. And you can get 20% off and free shipping by using the code EXTRA. So if you go to manscaped.com and use the code EXTRA, you can get 20% off and free shipping. And as these guys will attest, your genitals will thank you. So thank you very much to Manscaped. And let's move on to Joe's hot take.
All right. So my hot take this week... Now, I'm torn as to whether to go the whole 9 yards of this.
I'm pumped for this.
All right. I'm just going to go whole 9 yards. Everton will finish in the top four this season.
Whoa!
I think it's more likely the hot take, if I actually believe it, it's Everton can. I think I'm just doing it for the sake of the hot take being a bit spicier, but why not? Let's give it a blast. Because
you're
I think
a performer, mate.
Because I think Everton have had the second best summer, maybe alongside Aston Villa, obviously Chelsea leading the way, of any team in the Premier League. I think they've addressed all of their issues and more perfectly. They've spent little to no money doing so. They've got what I would consider the third best manager in the Premier League in charge of the club. And I think they're all going in the right direction, playing the exact way he wants to play. And I think they are a scary team to come up against right now. The summer business, James, Allen and Doucouré, by the way, a combined £45 million for them, which is just unbelievable. Obviously, James joining on a free, Allen 20, I think Doucouré 25, or it might be the other way around for those two. Ben Godfrey has been announced today officially. The fee was believed to be 30 there, but the reports are actually that it's 20 million with add-ons, which is, again, fantastic business given that he's, what, homegrown, still very young. I'd say an improvement on Holgate, battling with Michael Keane and Jerry Mina for that starting role, and an area that we've all said Everton need to improve on badly and rapidly at centre-half. I've watched, I think, all of their games this season, maybe missing one, and I think they're probably... before Liverpool's result yesterday and the shambles against Villa, I would have said they're the best team in the league. They're probably the best team I've watched this season, Everton. They play fun football. I think they look fairly solid at the back, if a little bit dodgy on that right-hand side when Coleman goes forward. And I think they're a bit dodgy in transition. But let's take nothing away from their results because, you know, Tottenham are one of the scary teams in the Premier League to face right now. Maybe they weren't first week, but Everton rolled them over and made it look very easy doing so, by the way. Could have beaten comfortably. The weekend that's just gone, very easy against Brighton as well. And Brighton, a bit like Tottenham, can be quite troublesome. They've scored 5 already twice this season. They've scored 4 already twice this season. They're top of the league. And I don't really see where the major issues are. I suppose maybe if James was to pick up an injury, they might struggle there. But, you know, he's created the most chances in the entire Premier League so far this season with 17. He's already scored 2. He's already, I think, got 4 assists as well in the league. Unbelievable. Mm. Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the on-form striker in the Premier League along with Harry Kane. I think he's got 9 goals already this season. The only drawback I can see with this Everton team not challenging for top four is Jordan Pickford. And I do think it's a major issue that needs to be addressed in the January window. But again, yes, the positive for Everton will be the January window is only 2 months away. It's 9 weeks away or something like that, isn't it? What is the date today? October the 5th or 6th, is it? October the 5th. So
yes, it's like 12.
12 weeks away. Yeah, which is no time at all if they can get to January in a solid position in the top four and then look to readdress that goalkeeping issue. It's not like you have to start in August and you're waiting another 6 months. So I think, I really think they can challenge for the top four. I just haven't seen any signs that they look that vulnerable. Even on the weekend, it's Brighton. They were without Alan. They were without Gomez in midfield and played Tom Davis in there as well. And Gylfi Sigurdsson.
The game against Liverpool
totally
is going to be a better barometer, right? The match against Liverpool this after the international break.
But I think even if they lose that, they won't be that fussed because it's Liverpool. Do you know what I mean?
I think it'd be the manner with which they lose it, right? If they're in the game, then that is massive progress. It's been the biggest non-derby in world football in the last 20 years, hasn't it? Everton have rolled over and had their bellies tickled every time.
Yeah,
last season they were in both of the fixtures against Liverpool. I mean,
yeah, I think for Liverpool's lack of finishing.
I don't know, man. Like, I thought they were pretty. I think they've been pretty good last season, but the seasons before that, they've had some dodgy times. But you know, like there were games that were decided by like Pickford flapping into his own goal and stuff.
I think
they've been all right.
The turnaround this summer has been absolutely remarkable. Because if you think back to that Tottenham game towards the back end of last season, when I remember Gary Neville saying on commentary, you know, this is just disgraceful performance, and Everton were a shambles. And I thought, I don't understand how Ancelotti turns this around. But after the summer he's had, the way he's got Calvert-Lewin playing, I really like how he's using Richarlison and Rodriguez as almost like these inside forwards that come inside and allow Digne and Coleman to get on the outside. Three very sound and solid central midfielders in Doucouré, Alan, and he's even found a role for Andre Gomez in there. I think with the addition of Ben Godfrey, it improves them massively at centre-half, and I actually think he might well take the place of one of Michael Keane or Jerry Mina. I just don't really see any issues for Everton, and to be honest with you, the biggest bonus for them finishing the top four is I think Chelsea look okay and I think they'll grow into it and finish comfortably third. But Man United for fourth, I don't think it's happening. I think Arsenal haven't improved particularly well at all in the summer window, particularly without signing any central midfielders and letting Guendouzi and Torreira go. I think Tottenham will push them pretty hard. But then the rest is just a bum fight between them, Wolves, maybe Leicester pop up as well.
Who's the backup striker apart if Dominic Calvert-Lewin gets injured, aside from Moise Keane, who might be going to PSG, right?
Well, Moise Keane's gone to PSG, but they'll play Richarlison through the middle. I don't think it's the worst option. I think he's absolutely fine going through there. And again, we could say the same things about a number of teams that are battling in that sort of top four area. If Aubameyang was to pick up an injury for Arsenal, for instance, I think they'd be in big trouble. Maybe not so much Tottenham now because Vinicius, but is Vinicius a better player than Richarlison to be playing through the middle? I don't know. I've never seen the guy play, to be honest with you, so I couldn't tell you.
If Calvert-Lewin, like, I'm very gassed for his progress. But like, is he going for a purple patch or is he a 15 to 20 goal like striker in the Premier League? Obviously went through that patch towards the end of the season where he didn't score in 10. Now everything's kind of flying in off him, left, right, centre. A few of them have been from a couple yards out, and why you can kind of credit his positional sense. It's also like part of me feels like it might just be a streak at the moment, but the quality of service into him is like never before, right? So you could argue that either way.
He's deadly from set pieces, and the set pieces Everton have got, I think it's probably the best in the league with Digne and Hammers stood over the balls at corners and free kicks.
Yeah, I would argue it's just they need Calvert-Lewin to progress at the same rate, right? Because every team in the top six has a striker that's capable of scoring 15 to 20 goals. Like, so I think just he needs to be that guy for them. And then I see them more of a top six challenge than a top four, but...
Ancelotti was appointed as Everton boss, I think only one player has scored more Premier League goals than Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and I think that's Harry Kane.
Okay,
interesting.
But
I worry a little bit about their fullbacks. I'm not sure what their fullback depth is.
I think Digne's all right. Digne looks pretty solid in this Ancelotti system.
But again, like there's relatively little depth there, right? Like that is a little bit of a problem, and it's not like they're not injury prone. They've got a lot of injury prone players at Everton.
Tom Davies went right back when Seamus Coleman came off as well in the last game.
That's interesting.
Against Brighton.
Yeah, I agree with the depth. The depth might well be an issue, and it might well end up coming back to bite them. Which is why I can't believe more can finish top four than will. But I don't know. I think they stand a bloody good chance with the dross that's also competing for that top four spot.
I mean, this is his nitpicking, isn't it? Like the fact he's kind of improved. A little bit more like rigid tactically, aren't they? And well, apart from Hammers is kind of given license to do what he likes, but the fact that he's improved Yerry Mina, Andre Gomez, even Gylfi Sigurdsson looks like he has a home as like a deep lying playmaker, doesn't he? At times, it bodes really well that he's kind of getting more out of those assets that we kind of wanted Everton just to move on.
Yeah, I think
I would not
go on, Pat. Go on, sorry.
Oh no, I was just going to say, like, I would absolutely not be surprised to see this happen. Like, I completely agree that, like, we can pick holes in their 11, but I think that those holes exist for every other club around them. And Calvert-Lewin, I do understand what you're saying. Like, it's been a relatively short period of time, but all the signs under the hood, it looks sustainable. You know, like, he was getting plenty of shots, good XG last season, and now they've added James as well. Like, maybe he slows down a little bit, but there's every sign that he's still going to score at a very good rate.
Yeah, I've not looked at his numbers in any great length, to be fair. That's just a kind of a general feeling. So
yeah, and also I think Richarlison can add more to this team than he's currently doing. He's missing some absolute sitters, Richarlison. Mm. I know he's been injured. He was injured against Brighton, obviously, but I think if he can add those goals to his game that he should be scoring, Everton could be flying. Some of the sitters he was missing against, like Tottenham, I don't know how serious that injury picked up was, but fingers crossed it's not too serious for the Toffees.
Yeah, I think unlike Leicester, you know, who bottomed out of the top four at the end of last season following that dreadful run, they actually do have a bit of strength and depth, which has been a positive legacy from hoarding or like signing the wrong players, hasn't it? Maybe still a little bit weak at fullback. But there's certainly still some useful assets on a wing. Like the team they put out, was it the Carabao Cup? Like, it was a vastly different 11, but it was still okay. I think that bodes well.
So just,
yeah, and then Iwobi getting an assist yesterday against Brighton. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, there's some talent here that, like, and Tom Davies had a horrible last year. He's definitely better than he was last year.
Mm. Yeah, and also, like, it seems like they're going to offload Theo Walcott today. Obviously, that will have happened by the time this podcast goes live to either, like, a Southampton, maybe a Brighton. But he's the top earner at the club, Theo Walcott, at the moment, by the way. So whatever James has come in on, it's not as much as Theo Walcott, which I thought was really fantastic business. Mm. I do want to just ask you guys, though, about the Jordan Pickford situation, because it is now becoming an extreme concern, surely, for Carlo Ancelotti. It's every week. It's Kepa levels of goalkeeping at the moment. And whether or not you think it's sustainable for him to be a top 10 goalkeeper in the Premier League.
I think Kepa was the only keeper last season in the Premier League who had worse save statistics than him, right? And he doesn't add anything in distribution. Like, his main asset is being homegrown. I would probably be looking for a keeper in January, but I don't think I'd go out and spend a fortune on one. I think that spending a fortune on a keeper is generally not a particularly wise idea. So yeah, I would look to replace him, but if replacing him was going to be 30 to 40 mil, I probably wouldn't do it, because as good as their signings have been this summer, I still have some reservations about Doucouré, but they are quite old.
I love Doucouré.
Like, Doucouré's 27, Alan's 29, obviously James is 29.
Stop making me feel old.
James, I think, will age kind of well. Like, James's style of play should age kind of well. But you could see with Alan, particularly, as he ages, like, we'd expect there to be a little bit of a drop-off. So those aren't really long-term signings. And if they don't get into the top four this year, and they are overspending in positions, then I think they could very quickly, like, see themselves slide back down the league. So I think now what they've got to do is add to that roster of young stars. You know, add to Richarlison, add to Calvert-Lewin, just so that then as these guys, like, maybe lose a little bit of physical power, they can have decent players coming through. So I'd go and spend money on a keeper, but I wouldn't go and spend, like, 30 million.
It's a shame. I think they should have gone for Emi Martinez, to be honest with you, and I think they would have got him ahead of Villa.
I was just about to say, Martinez would have been a great signing. I'm also looking at the Premier League table now and thinking, like, Gaeta from Crystal Palace, not the worst shout. Fraser Forster still not getting a game at Southampton. They're in a pretty bizarre position, haven't they, where they kind of stocked, they've got three almost first-choice goalkeepers that they've interchanged. So it might be worth a little inquiry there. I think Celtic were able to secure his services for around 10 mil, so wouldn't be the biggest gamble. And just worth having for if Pickford gets any worse. Because at the minute, he's kind of done like 6 of the 10 weirdest things I've seen a goalkeeper do in the Premier League in the last year. And it's been him. And the other four have been Kepa.
I mean, I do like seeing Pickford make mistakes because he pulls really funny faces when they happen. But yeah, that is very clearly like the biggest kind of weight dragging this side back. So if they address that, then who knows? Like the sky's the limit as long as Ancelotti doesn't just keep adding 20.
The Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Wyler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
29-year-olds, that would be a little bit concerning. So shall we move on to mine?
Yeah, come on, mate.
Because mine is quite hot. Okay, so this was actually... I dropped into the group chat on a Monday night when Arsenal were losing to Liverpool. And I saw, Chris, you say, I can't believe I ever contemplated like selling Aubameyang and keeping Lacazette. Like, I'm so sorry or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting because Lacazette did miss, obviously, a huge chance against Liverpool and the other one... And the other one that would have been whistled off, but Aubameyang did absolutely nothing in that game. Zero danger at any point. Didn't press well. Didn't create. Didn't get on the end of any chances. And after those three games, in fact, after four games now, we can talk. Like Lacazette has played three games and scored three goals. Aubameyang has played four games and scored once. Which is troubling.
Yeah, but he's been playing out of position, isn't he, to accommodate Lacazette and his ability to drop deep.
No, okay, well, we're going to come on to that. But he was also played out of position last season and he scored quite a lot of goals. Like, so it's when we say he's played out of position, like some games it's like he's really, really wide. But some games it's like he started on the left, but he doesn't actually spend the game on the left. So it's a little bit dependent on opposition. But through the first four games of the season, Aubameyang has had six shots. And two of those came yesterday against Sheffield United. That is worrying. That is worrying to me. Like, the players in the squad taking more shots per game than him are Lacazette, Nketiah, Pepe, Saka, Xhaka, all taking more shots per game than Aubameyang. And Aubameyang's never been a shot monster, but he's taking fewer shots than he did last year. Substantially so. And it's not like the system has changed between last year and this year. So that to me is worrying.
I think you're worrying for no reason, Pat. I think you're worrying for no reason. Honestly, I think that four games into the season, by the time we finish talking and by the time the season is done and dusted, he'll be hitting around the 20-goal-a-season mark. When he's finally played through the middle and you actually play somebody who should be playing left wing, left wing.
I agree that playing an actual left winger, left wing, would help. But yesterday was the first time we've seen Aubameyang play through the middle for Arteta. He played about 20 minutes there, during which time he had no shots, by the way, which was a little bit concerning. And it was kind of interesting because every time Arteta talks about strikers up until now, maybe he's changed his mind because Arsenal have had so few shots up until now. And he realizes that maybe they need to open the taps a little bit more and just take more risks to try and get more shots. But everything he said about strikers doesn't chime at all with Aubameyang's game. Like, he said that he likes strikers to drop deep, to link play, to be creative, to hold the ball up, to press. None of those are really things that Aubameyang does particularly well. And I say this, obviously, as a huge fan of Aubameyang, but, like, it does concern me a little bit. And I do think that there were a couple of misconceptions around Arsenal. I think, firstly, one was, oh, if you sell Aubameyang, you can't replace him. And I think that's true if you think that you can only replace a striker's output by buying one player to replace that striker. I think it depends what money you'd have got for him. You might have just not got enough money. But I remember this exact conversation happening with Alexis Sanchez when it was like, we should take 60 mil. And everyone was like, you can't possibly take 60 mil for him. And obviously we should have and reinvested. I think that you can build a squad that's more coherent, which creates more goals. Because you look at other teams in the league with inferior strikers and they still have better attacks, they create more shots and they score more goals.
But I cannot remember the last time a star player from a team was sold at a substantial rate and the replacements that joined actually ended up covering his output.
Like, yeah, your replacements
it doesn't happen.
maybe this, for me, it'd be more of a viable argument, like keeping Lacazette instead of Aubameyang if the Nicola Pepe transfer had worked out.
Sure, but I mean, like, if you'd sold Aubameyang, like, bearing in mind that Aubameyang, keeping Aubameyang at the club means committing 60 million to him over the next 3 years. Like,
but you're also committing to a goals deficit of about 50 without him. Like, I think your top goal scorer without Aubameyang at the club over the course of a season, like in the league, is Lacazette around the 10 mark.
But that's assuming, well, Lacazette got more than 10 last season, despite kind of missing like a lot of the campaign. And I think that assumes that you don't sign anyone. Like, obviously, if you sell Aubameyang, you go out and you get a proper number 10 and you buy, like, you try and get a goal-scoring winger. Or say you'd sold Aubameyang for like 40 mil and you could have gone and got your boy Odson Edouard. Like,
I need it.
The drop-off is so ginormous, though, between Odson Edouard and Aubameyang.
No, but that's,
and the fee is only £10 million versus differential.
But that's absolutely the wrong way of looking at it. Like, to say, like, oh, well, the drop-off from this player to that player is important. That's way less important than how the team plays as a whole. If the team doesn't create opportunities, Aubameyang's not going to create opportunities for himself. Like, he isn't. He's not that sort of player. And that's fair enough. Most players aren't that sort of player.
But he scored 20 goals last season in this team.
He did. But he is also getting older and we see players getting worse. And Arsenal also have major, major issues. I wouldn't be saying this if Arsenal had other positions sorted. But what we've seen this summer is that they've been completely incapable of addressing their problem areas. Like, in fact, even the players they were linked to, Partey and Aouar, would definitely improve them. But Aouar's not like a number 10 who produces like three chances a game. He's never been that. And so my issue was more that I felt, if you can sell a couple of these players and then address these problem areas, you make the team better as a whole. And I do think that there's this real problem in football of people saying, well, if you get this player, he's not as good as that player, therefore the team will be worse.
Do you not think...
But if you get two players and you can play a different style... Like, so for instance, sometimes if you have better centre-backs, you can play four at the back instead of like five at the back. And that means that you can then get another attacker on the pitch. That doesn't mean that attacker's better than the attacker who was there before. But simply having another attacking player makes the difference.
But do you not think at the moment having going through that transitional phase would be better whilst retaining Aubameyang, even if it means that you don't get your... primary target, say if you had to pay 40 million for Odson Edouard, like, would you not gradually improve other areas of the team rather than trying to kind of replace like for like? So you just said then if other moves had happened, or if there were improvements in other areas of the team, you wouldn't be sort of advocating selling Aubameyang and getting the sort of maximum profit for him while he's got still 3 years on his deal, or he's signed an extra 3 year deal. Would you not like consider 30 for Lacazette and then plug whatever? What are the biggest problems at Arsenal right now?
If somebody had come in with big money for Lacazette, I'd have absolutely taken that. That would have been totally fine. But I think it's fairly clear that Arsenal are not able to improve those other areas, like, while keeping Aubameyang. I think it seems pretty clear that, like, committing this money to Aubameyang means that Arsenal don't have the money to do those other things. Like, if it were a case of, oh, okay, we can keep Aubameyang while strengthening the rest of the squad, you do it. But fundamentally, when Arteta came in, everybody said, this is going to be two or three summers of rebuilding this squad. And now, at present, on transfer deadline day, it looks like one of those summers has been and gone without any improvement. Like, we've bought a centre-back, which is good, but we've committed also a bunch of money to Willian, which I think is probably a mistake. And so then one of your summers is gone when you're meant to be incrementally improving the squad. And it's fairly clear that that isn't because, like, Arteta's happy with the squad. He's been very clear that he isn't. It seems that Arsenal just don't have the finances, like, and certainly don't have the space on the wage bill.
By the money committed to Aubameyang, do you mean, like, the opportunity lost for not selling him for 70 mil? Because, of course, you could argue that this issue goes back to the Mesut Ozil contract. Or if Aubameyang's hindering you, Aubameyang is hindering you from a wage perspective, then how could the club afford to front 220k a week for Willian? Like, it doesn't feel like he's the roadblock to me, which is why I think selling him would be, like, It's just
for me, selling him would have just been so detrimental, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch for Arsenal this summer. I think that the mood around the club, if you'd have sold Aubameyang for £40 to £50 million, would have been disastrous.
But that's assuming that, firstly, you don't bring anyone else in.
But I think whoever you bring in, no Arsenal fan, for £50 million, for the let's say you sold him for 50, whichever player arrives for 50 is nowhere near Aubameyang's quality. So it's going to be a massive loss.
But you don't have to buy like one player for 50. You can get, say, two players for 25, which is absolutely what Arsenal should be doing.
But they are still doing that, aren't they? With Gabriel Magalhaes and...
That's the only one.
And they've bid up to £30 million for Aouar, haven't they? So it's just they've not actually found another target that they deem good enough in that price for that price mark.
Well,
but they've got the money still.
If they'd sold Aubameyang, they probably would have been able to go through with the Aouar move if that was who they really, really wanted. But it's more like when you say, like, definitely Mesut Ozil is a massive issue, but Mesut Ozil's contract is up next summer and then you can move on. Whereas now with Willian and Aubameyang, you've got huge contracts running for the next 3 years on guys who are old. Like, they are old. And it definitely is an issue, because I'm not just talking about the money committed to Aubameyang in terms of not getting some money from a sale. You're spending about £60 million on his contract over the next 3 years. Mm. If you assume you can get, say, £40 million for selling him, he's not going to be a part of an Arsenal side that are going to be great. Like, he just isn't. Like, this Arsenal team... it's very clear, is incapable of strengthening while they've got this particular wage bill, which is very high, while they've got this particular setup.
But does he truncate, does he shorten that regeneration period because his goals are what gets you into the Europa League and that's what helps you convince young, prodigious talents that Arsenal is the right place for your development and you're going to be great in 2 or 3 years' time, pickers over fourth place Everton?
Maybe, but maybe not. I mean, like, Arsenal missed out on Europa League in the league last season. And yes, they won the cup, but you can't bank on winning the FA Cup to get into the Europa League. Like, maybe he does, but equally, maybe he doesn't. And then you've spent all this money in the same way that they did with Sokratis, in the same way they did with David Luiz, in the same way they've now done with Cedric and Willian. Like, they've spent this short-term money in the hope that it can get you where you need to be. And after doing this so many times, you'd have thought that Arsenal would have learned and said, actually, the better thing to do is do what Liverpool did, which is be willing to sell a star and then buy smart players. Like, this
but
is,
the difference is Liverpool could sell their star for 150 or 120 million. You're selling your star for 40.
Not with Suarez. When Suarez went, he didn't go for like that much
70,
money.
70, wasn't it, Suarez?
Yeah, but that was a different market then.
It was, but I think, you know, the market kind of has gone back there a little. When you've got a guy with a year left on his contract and you've got COVID, then the market does shrink. If people were only offering 25, 30 mil for Aubameyang this summer, I can understand keeping him. But handing him a 3-year contract while handing Willian a 3-year contract is really, really troubling. And I think that imagining, oh, well, if we'd essentially swapped him for Edouard, that would have been a downgrade. Yeah, it would have been a downgrade this year, maybe next year, but in the third year, probably not. And that's assuming that you just go out and get one player, whereas Edouard also would have been on, what, maximum 100k a week rather than 300k a week, which gives you a huge amount of space in the wage bill as well.
But then you're also saying you don't entrust the Arsenal hierarchy to spend that extra money, that, you know, that difference between 100k and 300k would save you in this sort of interim period.
It's not necessarily that I don't trust them. Like, I don't think that they've made, like, tremendous decisions. A lot of the rumours kind of worry me as well. Mm. But
so does this become
you don't have the choice of just not making moves because you don't trust your board. Like, when you've got ageing players, whether you think the board are good or not, they're going to have to sell and buy. Like, there's no way around it, because you can't just keep your current squad until they're all 40. You have to sell and buy. And if they do a bad job, then, yeah, people should be fired. But I can't go on the assumption that, like, these are the best players we can get and there's no way we can ever buy a good player.
Is it less of an issue if your talent identification at that price point is better then?
Oh, well, that always helps. But at the same time, you know, like, Gabriel looks like a smart signing. I mean, the issue with Willian, I don't think that was necessarily, like, the club identifying a player badly. I think that was probably Arteta saying, I want this player, and nobody really having... like the guts to say, we're not going to do that. That's stupid. you know, Cedric, I think, was brought in on the assumption that Ainsley Maitland-Niles was probably going to leave. So a lot of these moves, like, you can kind of see the rationale, but they weren't particularly forward thinking. So, I don't particularly trust the board to do it. But I also think when you've built a squad where your highest earners are like all in their 30s, in the case of Willian, Ozil, Aubameyang and soon Lacazette, then you can't just like sit on what you have and assume it's going to be great, because one of these seasons Aubameyang will drop off. Like, at the moment we say, well, Aubameyang scored 22 last season, he scored 22 the season before. One of these seasons he's not going to score 22, and at that point Arsenal are still going to be paying him 300k a week, and that is concerning, because I don't know about you, but I don't think he's going to be scoring 22 at age 34. Whereas the prospect of somebody like Edouard coming in and being in that position in two to three years' time are pretty good, especially if you can also add a number 10. And so at the moment, I just look at this squad and I think it's nice to keep Aubameyang from the point of view of, you know, him being a good player and it kind of looking good to people around you. But I also think that sometimes you've got to sell and trust your ability to buy new players, especially when it seems that you just simply have no.
But why don't you do both? I think this being this prudent is like a lasting legacy of the Wenger era. Keep Aubameyang, sign Odson Edouard, and then embed him into the side.
Like, I agree. I would love to see that happen, but like, that's just like saying,
I know that that's the magic money tree argument, but. But I don't believe that's outside the realms of possibility for Arsenal at the moment. I know that Thomas Partey, like, that's become a sticking point at what, 30 mil? 25, 30 mil?
No, 45 mil.
But if you've got 30 million for Aouar now, you've got 30 million for Edouard, and just ride out another season with three central midfielders.
Yeah, but you're not going to... You wouldn't buy Edouard when you already have Lacazette and Aubameyang. Like, you'd only buy Edouard if you were going to sell one of those. Like, it makes much more sense to buy a creative midfielder now, except for the fact that Arsenal have spent all summer pursuing a midfielder who's not really a creative midfielder, in the hope that would fix them, despite knowing they didn't really have the money to do it. Like, that's pretty concerning. But, you know, Arsenal's planning is an interesting open question. And I think, in a way, we won't see how good Lacazette is if Arsenal don't add an attacking midfielder, because they've just got no one who can create in this side.
Mm. Wow. Some debate has to be said.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that Arsenal are pretty troubling so far this season. They have not been good at all. And they have not been good with Aubameyang. Like, and Aubameyang in particular has been pretty bad. So like, maybe when we come back from the international break, he's playing through the middle, he starts getting shots and everything looks rosy. And maybe this is a long-term decline and Arsenal have spent a load of money on somebody who over the next couple of years is going to get worse and worse. But I suppose we'll find out by the end of the season when Arsenal finish.
That's all right. We'll finish 12th, so don't worry about it.
Well, that would really cheer me up. Thank you very much for joining me today, guys. Is there anything that we should plug before we go?
Jack?
Trying to think now. This is going out on Wednesday, isn't it, Pat? So I would have done We Need to Talk ranking the Premier League club's summer business, and that will have gone out yesterday, actually, a special early week edition, so maybe have a watch that.
Nice. Chris?
I think there'll be a top 10 out on Eurofootball Daily, and go and show Doogie Critchley's latest iteration of Euro Roundup some love, because he's worked very hard on it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, guys. Make sure that you subscribe to this podcast channel if you haven't already, or subscribe to the podcast using whichever app you favor. Thank you very much for watching/listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Menards has what you need to beat the heat. From bottled water to air conditioners and fans, we have everything in stock to keep you from overheating. Patio umbrellas are simple but effective ways to cool down while outside. We also carry a wide assortment of sprinklers, pools, popsicles, and more to help keep the kids cool. Stock up and stay cool with help from Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.